if we don't mitigate against sea level rise. It's not something that may happen, it is happening. Beaches are being swallowed up into the sea.
The rising tides of environmental change. It's Tuesday, October 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. And we invite you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, helping the environment with less plastic. The name begins with C, and today is a milestone birthday. President Trump blocked by a wall of votes. Fast-spreading disease and a modern treasure hunt. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Global warming and rising sea levels potentially threaten much of Asia, including many small islands scattered from the Pacific across to Africa. Coastal communities in Australia are now calling for urgent government help to protect themselves from rising sea levels. The authors of the latest UN report on climate change predict Australia will experience what was previously once-in-a-century extreme coastal flooding every year by 2050. Phil Mercer is keeping his head above water to tell us more from Sydney.
The Australian coastline stretches for about 34,000 kilometres. The world's smallest continent is bordered by the Indian Ocean to its west, the Pacific in the east, and to the south by the Southern Ocean. The nation has an affinity with the sea. 85% of the population lives within 50 kilometres of the ocean. But already large sections of the Australian coastline have been washed away by wild storms and high tides. Seaside councils are calling on the government in Canberra to develop a national strategy to protect vulnerable areas from the impact of climate change. Much of Australia's key infrastructure, including transportation and communications networks, is located around coastal population centres. Scientists are warning that countries like Australia must prepare for unavoidable coastal changes. However, local authorities believe that the nation is ill-prepared. Sharon Cadwallader is deputy chair of the Australian Coastal Councils Association. She believes climate change could damage many seaside communities, including villages like Lennox Head, 185 kilometres south of Brisbane.
These storm surges are becoming more frequent. Storms that are coming and eroding more and more of the beach away. With sea level rise, that could well take out two streets of Lennox Head. If we don't mitigate against sea level rise, it's not something that may happen, it is happening. Beaches are being swallowed up into the sea, beach nourishment programs replacing sand on beaches.
Scientists say that as global temperatures go up, ice in glaciers, for example, begins to melt, causing the sea level to rise. Also, water expands as it gets warmer. So as the temperature of the sea goes up, the ocean expands. Conservationists believe that climate change is harming our oceans, damaging coral reefs and triggering more storms and bushfires. Australia's Federal Environment Minister Susan Ley said in a statement that her government was committed to meeting its international emissions targets. She added that Australia was a world leader in the protection and sustainable use of the oceans. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now on our website at voanews.com. Experts say another Trump-Kim summit hinges on denuclearization agreement. Uyghur jailed in China wins top European rights award. Thai Prime Minister advises masks against Bangkok smog. Beijing preps 10-story oil drilling platform for South China Sea despite wary Vietnam. China spurns U.S. criticism of economic cooperation with Afghanistan. VOA Asia Facebook is the place where you'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Plastic bags choke coral reefs, clog waterways, and provide a near-permanent mark on the landfills they occupy. One environmental agency estimates that Pakistan's port city of Karachi produces 5,000 to 7,000 tons of plastic each day. A ban on plastic bags in the region is to go into effect this week. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has bagged more details to share with us.
In one of the world's most populated cities, plastic bags choke life from polluted waterways. Now, local authorities move ahead with an initiative to ban their use.
Say no to plastic bags, say no to open littering. So hopefully, with appropriate public support, we should be able to enforce this ban.
Murtaza Wahab speaks for the government of Sindh, a southern region in Pakistan leading an initiative in Karachi to combat the plastics threatening its ecosystem.
It's an initiative for the betterment of the environment, and environment is not just for the government, for the rich or the poor. It is for everyone. So I think it is our battle, it is our cause, and all of us should work together to help save Mother Earth.
Officials say because plastic bags clog drains, any rainfall may flood the city.
Some of the material that we are consuming, like salt coming out of sea, it contains plastic. The plastic also become part of the air. So it is generally considered that human being at present are taking about the 5 grams of plastic in a week.
Mohammed Muazzam Khan is Pakistan's technical advisor for the World Wildlife Fund. He says increased plastics in our bodies raise the likelihood of cancer, but that curbing their use may not cure the environment.
If you're talking about replacing plastic with paper, we are having more impact on the environment than because of the plastic, because paper will come from the trees, and we definitely for trees mean that we will be destroying forests.
The lack of other options worries some in the business community.
The government should provide an alternative. Do they think customers would take groceries in their hands? Like us, other businesses need plastic bags and a proper solution. Thousands of livelihoods are connected to plastics.
Karachi's plastic bag ban goes into effect Tuesday, October 1st. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's prime minister has urged residents of Bangkok to wear face masks after smog covered parts of the city in what some fear is a harbinger of more pollution to come. Haze from fires in Indonesia has affected nearby countries including the Philippines, Singapore, Malaysia, and parts of Thailand. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia, and we send hearty birthday wishes today to former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who is now 95 years old. And if that accomplishment wasn't great enough, President Carter has now lived longer than any president in U.S. history. VOA's Kane Faribault has spoken with Mr. Carter many times over the years, and he tells us Carter has reached the historic milestone while engaging with new and younger audiences as he continues to work toward lifelong goals.
Please help me welcome
4 years after battling cancer,
the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter.
And 4 months after falling and breaking his hip, requiring weeks of intense physical therapy,
I will agree to answer questions.
Former President Jimmy Carter showed no signs of fatigue or pain as he stood unassisted.
What book did you read that changed your life?
And answered question,
how should we fix the increasing polarization between parties in our country?
After question,
as a peanut farmer, what are your thoughts on almond butter?
From students at an Emory University town hall event he's participated in every year for 38 years.
We only have peanut butter in our house.
I think that it's a problem when people overly lionize political figures, but I do have a great deal of respect for Jimmy Carter.
Gianluigi Zaninelli, a first-time town hall participant, says he came with an open mind about the one-term Democratic president.
I've heard a great many conservatives be incredibly critical of Jimmy Carter.
But Zaninelli says that comes from Carter's tumultuous time in the White House 4 decades ago, well before he was born.
But because of the good works that he's been doing over the course of the last 30 or more years, we have a high opinion of him as a human being, because what is indisputable is that Jimmy Carter cares about other people and devotes himself to service.
I would say I still adhere to the advice my school principal gave me. We must accommodate changing times, and these are really changing times. But cling to principles that never do change. Principles like telling the truth and helping other people.
In an exclusive interview with VOA, the 95-year-old Nobel Peace Prize laureate says his age may finally be catching up to him.
I used to travel to Africa 3 or 4 times a year and always to China and so forth. So I've cut back on my foreign travel, but I'm still, you know, involved in the Carter Center.
A center he leads with his wife, Rosalind, which wages peace, fights disease, and builds hope around the world through programs including election monitoring and guinea worm eradication. But recent setbacks, including new transmission of the worm between dogs, could jeopardize his wish for eradication in his lifetime.
And we think we've prevented maybe 80 million people from having guinea worm that would have had it otherwise. So we've made very good progress, but we still have a little ways to go.
President Carter is a kind of secular saint in America today.
Emory University history professor Joe Crispino says Carter has set a high standard for what is expected of U.S. presidents once they leave office.
His longevity, his commitment to doing as much good as he can do in the time that he has on earth is really a remarkable model, not just for his fellow Americans, but for people around the globe.
A globe partially transformed by the work President Carter says he and Mrs. Carter will continue to do for as long as they can. Kate Fairbaugh, VOA News, Atlanta, Georgia.
Coming up, a political wall stands in the way of a physical wall. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, a Uyghur scholar imprisoned in China since 2014 was jointly awarded a top European Human Rights Prize Monday, an accolade likely to draw the ire of Beijing. 49-year-old Ilham Tohti is serving a life sentence on charges of separatism for advocating the rights of Uyghurs in the Xinjiang region of China. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the U.S. Senate has voted again to block President Donald Trump's national emergency declaration and his plan to divert $3.6 billion from military projects to extend wall construction along the U.S.-Mexico border. Despite the setback, Trump could win a larger narrative on border security, an important issue for his supporters going into next year's election. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has more.
It's a core campaign promise, one that President Donald Trump was eager to highlight during his trip to San Diego this month.
It'll be over 400 miles, and we think we can get it close to 500 miles by the end of next year, depending on certain terrain conditions.
Dissatisfied by limited funds approved by Congress, the administration sought more wall money by siphoning $3.6 billion of Department of Defense construction projects, such as schools and military bases. The Senate recently voted to block the plan for the second time, but the chamber lacks the votes to override a presidential veto, which Trump is likely to do again.
The president is engaged in a calculated attempt to aggravate regional migration dynamics for domestic political gain at the expense of our national security.
Meanwhile, Trump has pushed Central American countries to prevent their citizens from migrating north and to take in asylum seekers denied protection in the U.S.
We actually make deals with Mexico and with Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and we're doing it with them instead of with our Congress. But we're doing it.
Border security is a key issue for Trump as he seeks re-election in 2020.
If you are a base core Trump supporter, you like the fact that the president has promised that we would secure our border, that we would have less illegal immigration into the country, and that it would have an impact on the wages of the average voter.
Bipartisan Policy Center immigration analyst Cristobal Ramon says Trump may be overpromising on how much border wall will actually be built in 2020 and questions whether the agreements with Central American countries can be implemented. The success of Trump's border initiatives may hinge on whether migrant arrivals continue a recent downward trend.
The key thing moving forward is, are we going to see the numbers kind of stay moderately low, or are they going to keep spiking back up?
In the meantime, Trump relies on political messaging to project a strong stance on immigration.
His political language is all about visuals. So I think that as long as he's able to convey that to his base, I think that that's something, you know, it's a victory for him.
An earnest effort and a perception of progress are important to the president's core supporters.
Ultimately, the voters will see him as working hard to keep his promises, which makes him unusual among politicians.
Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
This news break from VOA Asia. China is celebrating National Day, the anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China, usually marked with speeches, flags, and fireworks. This October 1st marks 70 years of Communist Party rule in China, 1 year longer than the Soviet Union lasted. We mark the day with stories from all across Asia on VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, this week world leaders at the UN General Assembly heard warnings about massive loss of life and diseases that could circle the globe in just 3 days. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that a special global preparedness monitoring group issued a report that says inaction on medical issues will have grim consequences. The report said prevention heavily depends on political and social action, as well as good medical care.
AIDS is no longer the threat it once was. Treatment has changed that, and research on a vaccine is promising. There's talk now about ending malaria in the next 30 years. Malaria kills 500,000 people each year, most of them children. Scientists are also closing in on Ebola. A vaccine to prevent Ebola, plus two new drugs to treat those who have it, are saving lives in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ebola used to kill up to 90% of its victims. But Dr. Anthony Fauci says, with treatment, chances of dying now depend on how much of the virus is in a person's bloodstream.
If you get a low viral load, the mortality goes down to around 10%.
Fauci heads research on infectious diseases at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. He's also a member of the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board. The board is an independent group called together by the World Health Organization and the World Bank to assess global preparedness for outbreaks of disease and other health emergencies. In its first report, the board warned that the world is woefully unprepared. So unprepared that the next pandemic caused by a deadly virus or bacterium or other agent could kill up to 80 million people and cause enormous economic suffering. The report was intended for political leaders worldwide.
If this had been the defense or military preparations in a country, it would not only have been the defense minister, but the whole government and the prime minister or president responsible. This has to be the same in global health security.
During a recent trip to East Africa, Dr. Fauci was pleased with the medical practices being used to contain the Ebola virus.
I was clearly impressed at the capabilities of the Congolese who were administering the care here, as well as the preparedness of the Rwandans and the Ugandans in case cases spill over the border.
In its report, the board cited political and social obstacles in reducing the threat of many diseases. TB, HIV/AIDS, Ebola, and others carry a stigma and discourage treatment. The report also cited lack of infrastructure, clean water and sanitation, and lack of funding.
We need to have a stronger preparedness across the board to avoid unnecessary loss of life and large economic losses.
The report warned that political situations like conflict and forced migration enable the spread of disease. It urged countries to establish emergency preparedness from the local level on up, to build trust, and to work with each other. They said action is urgently needed to avoid the next pandemic and huge loss of life. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A large number of treasure hunters from all over the world, about 350,000, have been scouting out a large area in the Rocky Mountains stretching from northern New Mexico to Montana, looking for a hidden treasure. As the story goes, all one needs to do to find the loot is to decipher the 9 clues in a poem written by wealthy art collector and entrepreneur Forrest Fenn, who says he collected and hid the treasure years ago. Its lore became widely popular after he had written a book called The Thrill of the Chase, talking about his life and the treasure. While many believe the treasure is real, others think it's a hoax. VOA's Penelope Palou visited the area and spoke with Fenn about the meaning of it all.
This is the spot I was talking about.
For 5.5 years, Sasha Johnston has been looking for the hidden treasure supposedly stashed in the Rocky Mountains by collector and entrepreneur Forrest Fenn.
I have searched approximately 300 times, but I don't really keep count. I just did an estimate.
We are at the Black Canyon campground north of Santa Fe, New Mexico.
This would be the starting point.
If true, the treasure could be anywhere between this opening all the way up to Montana. So what keeps Johnston and so many like her trying?
I have become more in tune with nature. And so I found it to be an incredibly rewarding experience. So that drives me. But on another level, I think I have made progress in figuring out the clues of Forrest Fenn's poem.
Begin at where warm waters halt, and take it in the canyon down. Not far, but too far to walk. Put in below the home of Brown.
Forrest Fenn says he built the treasure chest full of gems, gold, and jewels, and wrote the poem with the clues after he received a dire cancer diagnosis in 1988.
If I was going to die, I was just going to give other people the same opportunity that I've had.
He ended up beating cancer and kept the chest of valuable collectibles in his possession until 2010. When the recession was in full swing in America.
I wanted to give people hope. Maybe there is a pot of gold at the end of your rainbow if you'll go out there and look for it.
He says he was 79 years old when he hid that treasure chest.
It's not in a dangerous place.
At his home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Fenn is surrounded by art collections he amassed during his lifelong journey. A fishing guide in Yellowstone since the age of 9, Fenn lived a life as extraordinary as his treasure. He is a decorated fighter pilot who volunteered in 1968 to go to Vietnam. He says he flew hundreds of combat missions and cheated death on a number of occasions.
5 or 6. I crash landed one time in Vietnam. I was shot down, ejected from an F-100 in Laos.
Fenn kept a piece of the wreckage. He considers himself a man who has always lived on the edge. The treasure represents him.
This is his legacy.
A goldsmith by trade, Mark Howard, has known Fenn for more than 25 years. He has also been looking for the treasure for more than 9 years.
I'm a goldsmith. I would love to have a supply of gold that I didn't have to pay $1,500 an ounce for.
But lack of tangible proof of the treasure's whereabouts and its potential recovery has some questioning its existence.
Several people that I've talked to had seen it in his vault before he placed it. It was jaw-dropping.
The treasure hunt is believed to have caused tourism to soar in Santa Fe.
The city gave me a proclamation. Because the occupancy rate in the motels in Santa Fe was up 6% 2 years in a row, and nobody could figure out why.
But it has also claimed some lives.
I would urge people to know where you're going. The mountains can be terribly unforgiving to those who don't respect what they are and what they can do.
Does he believe people are close to finding it?
It's possible my treasure chest could be found this afternoon, or it could be 100 years or 500 years. Who knows?
Johnston is not deterred either.
I don't need other people to believe that Forrest Fenn hid a treasure, and I don't need them to believe that it could be found. I need to believe that, because I go out there with that same excitement and that same zest for life every single time. So I'm okay with looking for a hidden treasure, even if it's not there.
Penelope Palou, VOA News, Santa Fe, New Mexico.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud, of course on VOA Asia Facebook, and our website at voanews.com. And we can be heard on the radio. Many great radio stations throughout Asia carry our program, like DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman. That's in Quezon City. If you happen to be there, tune in. And we thank everybody at DZUP who listened today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman and Keith Lane, and thanks to AFRA for getting us streaming on Facebook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day.